You're listening to the Builderpedia podcast, the only podcast that takes you on the whole property journey, from planning, design, building, selling, and everything in between. Along the way, we'll introduce you to our network of friends and colleagues who are experts in their field. Now, here are your hosts, Matt and Jeannie from Ballast Point.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Builderpedia. Today, we're talking about the development application process, or commonly called the DA, and we're going to be figuring out whether you actually need one. Before we begin, let's say hi to my co-host, Matt. How are you going, Matt?
Hi, Jeannie. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's been a very busy week, as I'm sure it's the same with you.
Yeah, and I took Monday off, and I went mountain biking with friends for a weekend and took Monday off. Got peer pressured to take Monday off, and I'm still paying for it. So I have to pay the piper. But anyway, it was worth it.
That's good. But because, at least for me anyways, it's been a busy week, I guess I was a bit late on my homework, and I don't actually have an inspirational person in mind this week.
Neither do I. We've just given up. We'll have someone next week.
We will. We will be more inspired next week.
No one has inspired us that we can remember. But anyway, let's keep going. We tried. We tried and failed. So, but hopefully the rest of the podcast goes better.
There's just been a lot of logistics work on my end this week. So that's not particularly inspiring. But without further ado, let's dive into the meat of the development application process. So starting right from the beginning, what is a development application, Matt?
Well, it's a DA. Everyone knows it's a DA. So I think we can safely call it that. And what is it? Well, most of our clients, the first question they put to us is, do I need a DA for that? I mean, some people just assume that they will need one or they already know, but that's kind of like a recurring theme in early discussions with clients. Do I need a DA for that? Well, that development application, it's an application to get permission to build something or change something on your house or change the use of something. So it's permission from council to be able to build or change something that is to do with your house or if you're a business, your place of business. So that's what it is. And the reason most clients want to know if they need one is because it can be a tricky and costly process, so it's not unusual to get asked to do something without one, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, for now, yes, permission to build is a DA, really.
Mm-hmm. And as a homeowner, how will I know whether I actually need a DA or not? Who can help me make that decision?
Well, I guess you can talk to council or you can talk to local building professionals or planning professionals or local architects. Depends what it is as well. If it's pretty simple, yeah, talk to council is a good option. Normally they won't charge you for that. You can just set up a meeting with one of their planners and they'll happily, you know, as long as you're friendly, be happy to talk to you. But that's not a bad starting point. There is also information and we'll put some information somewhere on a link.
Yeah, somewhere. We have a blog post and with some links in it as well to go with this episode. And also, what are the different types of development consents out there?
Why don't you tell us, Jeannie?
Okay. So in order to determine what type of DAs that you need, there are a few different paths that you can go down. The first one is probably the most simple one. It's called an exempt development, which means that you actually don't need to go through any kind of an application process. You could just go ahead and build. And the features of these types of projects is that usually it doesn't really affect your neighbors or the surrounding amenities, and the scope of the project is quite small. So for those things, you don't actually need to put in an application. But for anything bigger and potentially a bit more contentious in terms of the surrounding environment and your neighbors, you could go through a complying development. So that's a fast track DA application where you have to meet a specific set of criterias without any deviation in order to be approved. So with these type of applications, it's probably suggested that you should work with an architect or a planning professional to help you make sure that your application fits within those set criterias.
One of the questions that our clients ask is, well, hey, is my house a complying development potentially? Is what I want to do a complying development or is it a DA? Well, I think what it is, you have to comply with very specific rules very tightly. Yes, there's legislation, but I think it's by definition complying. So you have to comply with very specific standards in terms of like setbacks. So how far from the boundary you are, what height you can be at, what your floor space ratio can be. Like, so it's very prescriptive. So I think complying development, as one of my site managers always used to say, it's a double-edged sword. On the one hand, it's fantastic because you don't need council anymore. So complying development means no more council involvement. It's you go around council essentially, and as long as you comply with those standards set out by state government. But the other edge of the sword is that the minute you're a millimeter out on any of those standards, it's not complying anymore. So you have to meet every single one of those rules.
It's basically a pass-fail process. So it's either this way or that way.
It's either complying or it's not complying, and therefore you need the DA. So the potential problem is that you're complying in everything except one crucial element, and it's no longer complying. So you may as well have started with a DA. And then exempt is things where I guess you're not changing anything. You're just, the purpose of exempt is you're not changing, you're renovating, but you're not changing the purpose of any of the rooms, or you're adding you're doing something simple like adding a rainwater tank, or, and again, very specific.
Or usually it's more internal works as well, because usually with development applications, councils would be concerned about the impact of the external envelope on neighbors and overshadowing and things like that. So a lot of the times internal works could be just done.
Yeah. And if you're exempt, I guess where people get a little bit confused is if you're changing the purpose of any room inside your house, it's no longer exempt. So if you're turning a bathroom into a kitchen, it's not exempt anymore. And it will never be exempt if you're changing the external envelope, like putting new windows in, then you're more down buying track. Of course, exempt is brilliant because you don't have to do anything. So if it can be exempt, that's the best case, because you just need to be sure that it is exempt and you don't need to do anything. You just execute the work.
So Matt, what about a heritage exemption application?
Well, the thing in a heritage conservation area is that there is limited scope for complying development. So one of the things that make it not complying potentially is being in a heritage conservation area. So that's a gate that you get stopped at pretty quickly. But councils have a side door, I guess, for you to do simple things like build a new fence or paint your house or even put a skylight in, and it's called a heritage exemption. And even in dysfunctional planning units like, you know, as council, it's still pretty straightforward to put a heritage exemption in. Again, as long as you're within the rules and you know what the rules are, it's fairly straightforward and inexpensive and simple and quick. So that's a very good option.
Yeah, so that's another pathway. And that leads us to the final form of a DA, which is kind of like the most standard process, which is where you go through council. And it's a merit-based application. So this process will require, again, an architect or a planning professional to help you prepare all the relevant documents, because essentially what you're doing is you're referring to the legislation and you're presenting a case or arguing for your design and trying to get council to agree with you and approve your design. So a lot of work is going to go into it. It's pretty time intensive as well compared to all the previous options, which is more or less like either you comply or you don't comply. So with this type of design, typically the project is more ambitious and potentially will have more effects on your neighbors and also the surrounding environment, usually.
Well, yeah, I think why people hate DAs and try and avoid, not avoid, but try other pathways first, like compliant development, is because the beauty of compliant development is it's objective and it's measurable. Everything's defined and it's simple. The minute you submit a development application, a planner then interprets the laws and the standards, and it suddenly something that's objective can become subjective. And we found that throughout, you know, our submissions, it's open to interpretation by a particular planner. And particularly, like, and one of the bugbears, I guess, or one of the pain points in a West where we are, in a West of Sydney, is heritage, because even that's the extreme end of the subjective, because it is very subjective, because what is valuable, what is heritage, depends on the person assessing. So you go from one extreme, which is highly measurable and objective in compliant development, otherwise known as CDC in New South Wales, and then you go to this very opaque, abstract and very subjective view where someone has an opinion of what something maybe should look like to fit into a streetscape. And when it boils down to it and it's a negotiation at some point, there's a lot of horse trading between different heritage consultants, one that you've employed and one that council's employed.
I think that makes sense, but it, essentially to answer the question of, as a homeowner, how will you know whether you need a DA or not? For most things beyond putting up, like, probably internal works, for most things you will need some kind of an application process for. And if you're time and budget conscious, probably going with a compliant development or a heritage exemption is the way to go. And you're going to try to make your design fit within those parameters. But anything more ambitious beyond that, you're looking at a traditional development application, and you have to be prepared that it's going to be a bit more of an arduous process because you're dealing with people.
Yes and no, I guess it depends, because some DAs are very simple. So I think maybe it's not right to say that it's always going to be arduous. Some DAs are relatively straightforward and they don't have to be arduous, but certainly it depends on how ambitious your plans are and what you're thinking to do will determine how arduous and where it is, you know. So, but the key with a DA is horses for courses. First and foremost, like, if you're doing something very simple, it's totally appropriate to get a draftsman. And I mean, some people, I know of people who've drawn it themselves. I've got a mate who did tech drawing in year 12 and he drew his own, you know, got his old drafting set out and hand drew everything and submitted his own DA. But I think once you're constrained and things like overshadowing come into play, you really need a good team, a good architect, and some good software to argue a point potentially, or to show the impacts, particularly where we are, small blocks. They might be as small as 100 square meters or even smaller. And really anything you're going to do is going to impact someone and potentially lots of people. So, yeah, it does get curly and you need a good team behind you, not just the architect.
So as part of the process of assembling a good team, who do you need in that team aside from the architect?
So it's specific to the particular project. And if you're dealing with trees and you're hoping to remove a tree for the purpose of building in that spot, then you need an arborist. If you're in a heritage conservation area, you really need a heritage consultant if you're impacting the streetscape. So you need horses for courses. You'll need a survey done. No matter what you're doing, you will need a survey initially, and you'll need a compliance survey. And we do occasionally get a survey that clients have brought to us already, but it needs to be compliant with council's regulations. So to make sure if you're getting a survey that you are saying it's for the purpose of a DA and needs to be compliant with council.
But we've also found in previous experience that sometimes council's requirements for surveys can be vague, and what will work for one project won't work for another as well. That's just from what I've seen. And as far as I'm aware of, there's really no way of getting around. Like, council's kind of unpredictable when it comes to things like that.
Yeah, council planners have a knack for finding something that you haven't got that they suddenly decided you need on that specific project. Like, a new one that we never dealt with before is getting a shadow diagram for your neighbor's fences. And you're kind of like, well, why? There is a technical reason, and they suddenly decided that shadows cast by fences are important. And you kind of go, okay, well, technically you're right, but that's just really silly. So there's things that there's always uncertainty in the DA process. And I guess sometimes a client might say, well, why didn't you get that done in the beginning? Why didn't you just get that done anyway? Like, well, you can't predict everything they're going to want. And you tend to not want to get unnecessary consultants in because, you know, any consultant is going to cost you thousands of dollars. And you try and submit something without that. If you're not sure whether you're going to need it, why spend your client's money on it? So that's always a bit of a conundrum, because you have to find the right balance between what council's going to want and what's reasonable is tricky. So, yeah, because you don't want to give them things that they're not going to need either and waste your client's money.
Yeah, a lot of money on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So moving on, what happens when you decide to do some work anyways without getting an approval?
So I think the first thing that should be said is what your dad got away with years ago, you're not going to get away with anymore, and things have changed. So once upon a time, your dad just built stuff or he put an extension on, sometimes with a DA, sometimes without, and you can't really get away with just building what you want, right down to even 5 or 10 years ago. It wasn't uncommon to have an approved set of plans and deviate from them slightly while pursuing an amendment to that development application. Whereas now that's really tightened up, and certifiers are very much aware of anything that's not on the plan. And so you can't really deviate from plans in the way you used to. And there's a lot of those gray areas have been tightened up. And we do get pressure to build things and that are unapproved, but I guess I do have some sympathy because I know how painful council can be. So I'm sympathetic to clients who say, well, it's my own house and I bought it and I own it. And sometimes, yeah, as a building and a design professional, you have to say, well, no, you do need a DA. We can't really help you without it. But you're sympathetic because sometimes it's things that they want to do that don't impact anyone. But yeah, I think if you are going to do, we're not condoning it, but if you are going to do any work that is unapproved, just be aware of the consequences, because there are potential consequences.
And some of the consequences could include a fine, criminal offense, conviction. Your masterpiece could be ordered to be demolished. And ultimately, it's a lot of wasted time and money.
It's not unprecedented for, something to be ordered to be removed or dismantled. It doesn't happen all the time, but it can happen.
Mm-hmm. Especially if your neighbors dob you in.
Yeah, and it is. And that's the key. And again, not condoning unapproved work, but really it comes down to who you're impacting. And a council don't wander around seeing what you're doing. They're not really that interested. It's really going to be something that you do that impacts other people that's going to draw attention to what you've done. And councils hate having to deal with it, so they'll throw the book at you because you're making them do work they otherwise wouldn't have by dealing with neighbors' complaints. So that's what they really don't like. But I think you really, yeah, you can't really get away with things that your dad used to, in a nutshell. You've got to cover your bases.
And as a case study, there was an instance in Sutherlandshire where a homeowner had actually gotten an approval to build a small garage at the back, but he decided to deviate and build a slightly bigger garage. And ultimately, his neighbors did complain and the whole thing had to be demolished, even though he kind of went back and tried to retrospectively get approval for that bigger garage. So that
there you go.
Kind of ended up in tears with
even in the Shire.
A lot of waste even in the Shire with a lot of wasted time and money.
Absolutely. And it's and I think one factor that's caused things to be tightened up is abuse of the system and dodgy developments that were potentially partly approved, partly unapproved, retrospectively tried to be approved and bulldozed through, and people sort of had enough of that sort of practice. Unfortunately, it tightened up the game for everyone, not just the dodgy operators.
So let's say I'm going through the DA process and have a beautiful design that I really want to get approved, but there's just a little part of it that just does not meet some of the key planning standards. Does that mean my development application won't get approved? Is there anything I can do if this is the case?
Yeah, so that happens all the time. And I guess it depends which standards. So there's development standards and there's Australian standards. And if you're not meeting Australian standards, you're stuffed. Like you can't, council would not approve anything that doesn't comply with Australian standards. So that's the first barrier, I guess, the first gate. But development standards are a little bit different. You can apply for exemption. And again, you're in a DA, you're in a more of a subjective zone. So we have successfully got exemptions for clients. I guess an example would be where the new development was under an existing house. So it wasn't changing the height of the house, or we weren't changing the building line at the back of the house. We were just turning a dysfunctional laundry into a much bigger space underneath the house. And that was successfully argued that even though we were exceeding, in that instance, floor space ratio, we weren't changing site coverage, and a lot of the other standards were unaffected. So that was approved. But the problem is when you have exceeded floor space ratio and you're overshadowing part of your neighbor's yard and you're going beyond the accepted building line and you're impacting views.
And then
when all those things stack up, then you're probably, I don't know how to say it except pushing shit uphill, and not impossible but improbable. And in those instances where you've exceeded every standard, you've probably got to go to court. Council are going to push back, and you have to prepare to take a risk and potentially lose. So it's a little bit, it's that subjective side of DA that means that you can push the envelope a little bit, be a bit ambitious, but at the same time you're dealing with, it's very subjective arguments and sometimes ridiculous arguments about some cases, about a little bit of overshadowing, millimeters of extra overshadowing in a space that doesn't appear to be used very often. And sometimes you're in a negotiation and you look around the room and you look at how much it's costing everyone, including council, and you're like, is this a rational thing? Is this a rational conversation for adults to have about a fascia? The color of a fascia, the color of a bit of roof, or a little bit of shadow, and you're kind of going, this is ridiculous. And I've been in those situations, and I just feel like saying to everyone, can everyone just speak faster? Because the meter's running.
So in a nutshell, there are mechanisms if you want to push the boundary and go beyond those principal development standards. And this mechanism is called the Clause 4.6 variation. And this is where you need a good team of architects and planning professionals to advise you and help you decide whether it's worth fighting that fight or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it depends on complexity and ambition. I guess we just resolved earlier to refine it to those terms. And yeah, it depends. And the more ambitious, the more complex, the bigger your team, you know, then you may need a planner on your team and a solicitor potentially. So yeah, I guess that might be what it needs, because you do need a team to argue a case and argue technical aspects of each of their bit of expertise, be they a arborist or a heritage consultant. They put all the pieces together and make a case for the overall.
I guess because essentially it's a negotiation and it's an argument in some cases with your neighbors. That's why you do need the planning professionals and you do need the consultants, because they bring credibility and expertise that helps your case, really. And yeah, it's an expensive process, but it's what's going to move the needle.
I guess it's not an argument with your neighbor. It's always an argument with council. Your neighbor has an opinion and can express that, but you don't tend to, they're not really, I guess they can make a case to council. Well, they can make a case if you're in land environment court. They can certainly make a statement. But yeah, it's really between you and the council. And it gets technical because, yeah, particularly things like overshadowing and quick calculations, if you really need modern software to turn on a dime, and if you're negotiating a set of plans, you want to be able to produce them quickly to keep the conversation going. But, you know, I guess we're talking more where it gets to a negotiated outcome where there's a discussion. And yeah, there's an art to it as well, I think. And that shouldn't be forgotten, that there is a bit of an art to getting things approved. And I don't mean a dark art where you have to pay off to dodgy planners. I mean, there is an art to pulling all the pieces together and presenting in a particular way that's persuasive. So there is a bit of that go into it, and there is inside knowledge. So if you know how council operate and how council think and what they're going to say, you can preempt those things in your application, and you've got a much better chance of succeeding if you already know what the subjective parameters might be, so to speak.
So in terms of practical advice for our listeners, as you can see within the DA process, in terms of putting a submission together, it could get technical and just quite complicated pretty quickly. So from us, probably the best advice is to engage professionals like architects or planning lawyers that has worked within your particular area and is aware of how your local council operates and has a track record of seeing what the objections are in order to preempt them. So that's probably going to give you your best bet.
Absolutely. Local knowledge is important. To a point, though, like state planning law is uniform throughout the state, but it's just knowing a few of the intricacies of, particularly when it comes to small sites in the inner west or in the east, or dealing with heritage and understanding how councils, heritage consultants think about heritage. And yeah, I think that is invaluable. Local knowledge is valuable. But also, yeah, on the flip side, yeah, the standards are uniform throughout the state. So technically a compliant development anywhere in the state has the same parameters, has the same set of rules that you comply with or not comply with. So wherever you are, it's the rules are the same, which is means that for a compliant development, you can design anywhere and it's the same set of rules. But yeah, local, I mean, conversely, out of the city, you have to deal with things like fire risk or flooding or other specific things. So yeah, local knowledge and understanding of that part of planning is important. So it's not just, it works both ways, because that extra bit of knowledge smooths the path out. There's nothing worse than designing something and finding that it won't comply because you didn't factor in the fact that it's in a flood zone or the fact that it's in a bushfire zone, or you got the bushfire zoning wrong, so you have to change the whole design. So, yeah, and that's local knowledge that's important.
So as we head towards wrapping up this episode, Matt, what would you say are the top three takeaways from today's episode?
I think the first takeaway is get good advice, and if you need a DA, find a good team, find a good architect who's been successful in the area, so get good references, I guess. You want to employ a successful architect. I mean, we've picked up jobs from architects who failed dismally, and then the client's taken those plans to us. I'm not trying to bag anyone. When they won't name any names, we'll protect the innocent. But yeah, I think you can kind of look at some plans that I've seen, and you're just like, well, that was never going to happen. Like, so I'm elaborating when I'm supposed to be wrapping up. But good team that is suitable for the job. Find the right person, right job is the first takeaway. And if you can get away with compliant development, that'll save you a lot of time and money. So try and make something work as exempt or complying if you can. That's probably the second most important point. And number three, you can't get away with what your dad got away with. So just make yourself aware and don't do silly things. Get proper advice, get proper approval, and do things the right way. You can't get away with things that happened 10 years ago. So, you know, like, not my dad. My dad wouldn't have taken on any sort of projects, but I know a few friends and, you know, their dad would just build an extra room whenever they needed it. Like, approval for approval. Like, they needed space. They just build the room and then worry about it later. Can't do that anymore. So work within the rules. That's my three takeaways.
That wraps up the contents of our episode pretty well. So thank you to our listeners for tuning in today. For any additional information that is also up on our blog, we will have some links to a PDF guide to describe the planning process a bit more in detail, and also the development application process a bit more in detail as well. So check out those links. Thank you for tuning in to Buildopedia. If you enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating to help other listeners like you find our podcast. For more information, please check out the show notes and connect with us on social media. We would love to hear from you.